Welcome to Forever Giants, the podcast. I'm Ranelle Brooks Moon. In today's episode, I sit down with Jeffrey Leonard at the beautiful Silver Oak Cellars in Napa Valley. The story of the San Francisco Giants is legendary. In my years as the official voice of the Giants, I've had the privilege to meet countless players and personalities whose passion for this team is only matched by their love for the game. Their stories are intertwined within the fabric of this team's history. They are Forever Giants.
And he hits a fastball in the air to left field. Coleman going back to the track, to the wall, leaps in the air, it's gone, home run. He stopped to watch this run.
Jeffrey Leonard was a natural on the diamond. During his 14-year career, he was a two-time All-Star and the 1987 NLCS MVP. Known for swinging at the first pitch, he garnered the nickname Hackman. And when he was on, he was one of the best hitters in baseball. Introduced to the game at a young age, the Hackman story begins in the city of brotherly love. Jeffrey Leonard, this is a real treat for me. Thank you for joining me. My Virgo brother. September 22nd, we share a birthday, okay?
My pleasure.
Thank you so much. And we were talking a little bit earlier about how I learned baseball at the age of five, going to Candlestick with my parents, and you started playing baseball at the age of five.
Yes, I did. Running up and down the hallways, sliding into the TV. Yeah, that's where I started.
And your dad played semi-pro, so yes. I'm sure that had a big impact on you, right?
Yeah, he taught me the game. You know, he's my first guy. He taught me the ins and outs, taught me the fundamentals, and you know how to throw, how to catch, how to hit. So it helped us a lot. As a father and son, our relationship was very, very strong.
Well, we're going to get into that a little bit later, but we're going to also, of course, talk about your time as a Giant and your amazing 1987 NLCS, which is still just ridiculous. Okay. But I want to go back to the beginning because I don't think a lot of our viewers know that you were born in Philadelphia. Yes. By the way, congratulations on your Eagles.
Yes, thank you.
How fantastic was that? Hey! Oh, he's doing a little dance. Oh, my gosh. Where were you watching the Super Bowl? I need to know.
I was in Roseville.
Oh, okay.
But my sisters still live in Philadelphia, so they were calling me and texting me and all that. So it was good.
Y'all were waiting a long time for that one.
A long time.
Well, you mentioned your sister. You were the only boy in this family.
Yes.
And you had two sisters. And tell me a little bit about their impact and influence on you, because I was reading that you just hung out with them and you listened to music and you danced the twist with them. Is that real talk? Come on.
That's real talk. I had a younger sister who was 3 years younger, and then I had an older sister who was 3 years older. And so, I was stuck in the middle. As far as competition, my oldest sister was the one, because I was always smaller than her, slower than her. She beat me in everything.
Riding,
I mean, cowboys and Indians, riding bikes, racing, everything. So I couldn't wait for the day that I would outgrow her and get her. So I finally did.
Yes, you did.
Yeah, great influence. Yeah, we danced a lot. We sung a lot. You know, we were a singing family.
That was good music back then. We're talking Motown, Jeffrey Leonard.
Yes,
talk to me about it.
Right?
Did you do the Temptation Walk and everything?
I did all that.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Wonderful times.
And your mom, I love that your mom said about you she said you were very shy, which I need to talk to you about. She said you were very shy, but she also said that you never gave her 1 minute of trouble. What was going on in that household that had you so disciplined that you didn't ever want to disappoint your mama?
She might have been a little bit too kind.
Oh, okay. Talk to me.
Oh, well, we had a nice little tree out front, but it had these switches. So I don't know if you know. You go pull a switch off and that didn't hurt. I mean, that hurt a lot. But, we had our discipline, and we had this little drawer in the kitchen.
Uh-oh.
And one of my aunts, we had a belt, and we called it Aunt Sing's belt. And it was in that drawer. So we all knew if we had to go to that drawer.
You were in trouble.
We were in trouble. But, times have changed. But, there's no timeouts back then.
So oh, no.
It was just, here no. it is. And
And we understood it back at that time. That's how it was.
Yes, exactly. We would go out on the L's or the buses and trolleys and all that. My mom had this little pinch, and we got out of order. Just a little touch, and bam! That would last about 15 or 20 minutes. You just sit here like, oh.
And what about the look? I remember I would just get a look, and I knew I had to straighten up, right?
Yes.
Right.
Across the room, just a little bam. You're like, oh, okay, mom. Yeah, she was the one. She disciplined us pretty good.
Yeah, that's our old school upbringing that we share. Yeah. Now, to stay out of trouble, I was reading, you actually played sports all year round.
Yeah.
What did you play in addition to baseball? What else did you play?
I played basketball, football, ran track. I tried soccer just for a little bit, but
really?
Like, come on with that.
You weren't feeling soccer.
I wasn't feeling soccer. A little bit of high hurling.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah,
you did everything. Looking back on that now, do you see that as really keeping you out of trouble and keeping you on the straight and narrow? Because I'm sure you didn't know that at the time, right?
No, exactly. It kept me out of a whole lot of trouble. You know?
Yeah.
It took away, it filled up those empty spaces of time, you know, those times. And I didn't run around as much with all the guys from the neighborhood, so.
Yeah, because they're a little dicey, right?
They're a little dicey.
Yeah.
They're a little dicey, but, you know.
But mom and dad made sure you stayed out of trouble.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, is it true that you developed the strength in your arm from throwing rocks at passing cars?
Come on.
I'm just telling you what I read. I did my research. That's all I'm saying. Is that true?
I don't know about passing cars, but yeah, I would throw rocks, and we had this big old tree that the little green apples, and me and my best friend at the time, Glover Reddick, we were always throwing something, you know, and then we had this big aluminum trash cans, and we would love to hear the sound of a combination hit.
Okay.
So how far, you know, we could throw them and all that, we love to throw apples too, the little green apples. Mm-hmm. So that contributed to my accuracy.
Right. That's fantastic. So, okay, you played every sport as a little kid, and then in high school, you excelled in addition to baseball, basketball and football as well, right? Was it football that you really wanted to play, or which sport did you really want to pursue?
Well, I always played baseball, obviously, but I got dared to play football because, you know, growing up in Philadelphia, we always played football on the street, you know, running patterns and on somebody's lawn, behind a car, in front of a car, and I was there, but you can't do that on the real field, blah, blah, blah. Oh. I was like, whatever. So I tried out for the team in high school. I was scared to death.
Were you really?
Because I had never been hit. Like, you going to hit me right now, you know, for practice? So it really wasn't that bad. And all of a sudden, I was like, wow, this is kind of fun. And my father hated it. He absolutely hated me playing football.
He didn't want you getting hurt, or what? That was his issue?
He wasn't with the football thing.
Uh-huh.
And then I just kept going and going and going, and then I actually fell in love with football.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then senior year in high school, you got injured, and that pretty much ended your football career, right?
Pretty much. I mean, I was running like a kickoff return, and I got my ankle broken, and that pretty much slowed me down a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, I still could have played, but it was an easier route to go baseball at that point. But I still would have played baseball in college.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know.
And you played basketball. You excelled at basketball, too. You lettered in all three of these sports.
Yes, I did. Yes,
wow.
Yeah. Well, you know, coming from Philadelphia, you have to know how to play basketball. So, especially on my block.
Right, right.
You know, so I learned it. I liked it. It was fun. I could just jump. So that was a big plus, you know, for me. But basketball was probably third.
Did you find that you just had a natural athletic ability in all three of these sports, or was one more challenging than the other?
Because
it seems like, I mean, you lettered in all three, right?
They really weren't challenging outside of the
of course.
Outside of the basketball, because, you know, I had to learn how to shoot and all this other stuff. It was just fun, but we played so many games on the street. You know, 1, 2, 3, Ringo. We played tag, hide and seek. We were always doing something, moving, running, you know.
Active.
Developing motor skills inside that we didn't even know that we were doing.
Yeah.
And it all just came, you know, it just all fell into place. So by the time I was out there, you know, the rhythm side and all that was there. So it made it a lot easier.
That was the beauty of our era, right?
Yes.
We didn't even know how good we had
yes.
it. And you didn't even know how good you were at all
yep.
three of those sports. Yep. But your dad did play semi-pro baseball.
Yeah.
So tell me how that impacted you.
A lot. It's funny because he was a switch hitter. And he never taught me how to hit left hand. I was like, wow, man. So he made me a straight right-hander. Yeah, he was a second baseman. He was pretty good. We talked baseball all the time.
All the time. Did you really?
Yeah.
At a young age?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Even when, you know, on the teams, we would probably spend most of our time just sitting outside in front of the house, just going over different situations and fundamentals. And at that time, Gene Mock had he was the manager of the Phillies. He had a weekly newspaper article thing. And each week it was on a different part of baseball. My father would cut those out, and then we'd have a team meeting, and he would go over that. And we would, so a lot of times, we never even hit the field. We would just sit there and talk and just get the situations inside of our heads and rundowns and pickoffs, first and third defense and all this.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we learned a lot that way.
So he was your first coach, basically,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes.
Right, and he coached you on teams where you played with older players to kind of challenge you, right?
Yeah, that kind of, I kind of didn't understand it at first because my first year, I didn't play one game. I sat on the bench the whole year.
Daddy was teaching you a lesson.
I was like, man. And I remember I used to run and go dive in the dirt and slide and go home dirty like I played.
Right.
Didn't play a lick. So I was about 10, 11, and then my next season, he put me at shortstop. So, you know, everybody was like, oh, man, you won't be playing because, you know, you're popular in this baby boy, blah, 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 blah.
Oh.
And then so I guess his plan worked because, you know, at that time I you know, I assumed that he knew that I was ready. So he threw me out there, and I kind of held my own. And I didn't hear any more talk about that, you know, anymore.
Well, he saw something in you. He said that you were a natural leader, even at a young age. Did you even sense that at that time, that you had,
no.
had a leadership role
no.
with the older guys?
No, not at all.
Wow.
I was just really, really quiet and you know, like in the background.
Yeah. So under the leadership of your dad, you were gifted as a hitter, a fielder, and a leader. But unfortunately, you didn't get a lot of interest from scouts when you were playing baseball. I mean, was that how disappointing was that?
No.
What happened?
Oh, wait a minute.
Okay, correct me.
I was actually, the Phillies, I was talking to the Phillies a lot.
They said they were going to draft you, right?
Yeah, they pretty much said that they were going to draft me and all that. They'd come by the house and so forth and so on. And then when the actual draft came, I wasn't even in the draft. So it was like 10 college kids and 5 high school kids. Mm. They put the 10 college kids in the draft and cut us out. You know, one of the scouts had come around and came back to our house, and he told us that, you know, it was a business thing. They felt as though they could come back a little later on and sign us off for, you know, hardly nothing. But it kind of put a bad taste in my mouth.
Yeah.
So I was kind of like about baseball at that time.
It must have been your dream to grow up and play for the Phillies, right?
It was part of it.
Uh-huh.
I was at Kymex Stadium all the time. And it kind of hurt.
Yeah.
It hurt, you know.
It hurt, right?
It hurt. So, but I kept on playing, you know, high school ball. And I think it was the last high school game I had, Dodger Scout had come out. And,
I love this story. Please tell the story.
He, you know, he tapped me on my shoulder and asked me, you know, was I going to go to college and all that and play baseball. So I was kind of like shining them. I said, I don't know. I may do it, whatever.
Right.
I wasn't trying to be rude, but I was kind of like, I wasn't really, I was mad, you know, I was kind of upset and hurt and all at the same time.
Right.
Nice guy, Ed Liberatore, and he kept talking and talking and talking, and this is during the game. So I was trying to keep my focus and everything, and so I said, well, I'm going to play American Legion ball. And so then he pulled out a card and gave me his card and said, send me, one of your schedules. I said, yeah, okay, man. All right, thank you. Bam. And that was it. So I
then
didn't.
You just forgot about it.
I didn't think right. another thing about it. So the season's over. We hand in all of our stuff. You know, I go home, whatever, you know. And then at some point, I'm talking to my father.
Right.
I go, oh, yeah, Dad, a Dodger scout came out and, you know, talked to me, and he hits the roof. I go, oh, he gave me a card, too.
Wait, because Daddy didn't know.
No, he
oh,
didn't know.
Oh, Lord. You got the card from the scout, and you didn't tell
I
your didn't, father.
I didn't even tell him.
Oh, my goodness.
I didn't tell him. And
because that's how disappointed you were.
Okay? Yeah.
Yeah, I got it. I got it.
So I'll go back to high school hoping to find it. Get coached. We go back into the locker room and all that. They hadn't even done anything. It's a room with a pile of uniforms, just a stack of uniforms. I go through them all. I find my pants. I find the card. I take it back home. I give it to my father. And he calls the scout. The scout comes out to one of my American Legion games.
Uh-huh.
That's how that happened. And then he wanted me to stay after, which I did. And
he put you through drills.
Put me through some drills, infield at shortstop, fly balls in center field, and I was hitting and all that. And then he offered me the contract.
I love this story so much, because you had to run back to the school, go into your dirty uniform. It's like a week later, right?
Yes.
And you
yes.
find his business card,
yes, yes.
which you had not told your father about.
I didn't tell him.
Oh, no. My goodness. And prior to this, though, you got a zillion football scholarships, uh-huh. right? And some basketball scholarships.
Yes.
Zero baseball scholarships.
Nah, didn't get one.
So how did that affect you?
It didn't at all, because
in
my mind, I was going to play two sports.
Okay.
So I was going to end up playing baseball anyway. But I did plan on playing football. I won't lie about that.
Right. Was that your number one?
No, I don't know about number one, but I just knew that I could play baseball. I always played baseball. So I didn't look at those two the same.
Oh, that's interesting.
I happened to fall in love with football. So it might have been newer or fresher or whatever, but I had a lot of fun playing football.
It was more challenging for you.
Yeah, especially after I got knocked out. So that changed a whole lot.
Who knocked you out?
I was I was playing one game, and at this time I was just running back the punts, running back kickoffs, and I was a starting tight end.
Okay.
So they called an audible pass, and I catch a little looking pass across the middle. So I remember running the route, and I
sure.
catching the ball.
Right.
And the next thing I remember, I was laying on the sidelines looking up. So my coaches asked me, do you know where you are?
Oh,
how many fingers am I holding
up? The whole
up?
Protocol.
And I'm going like, what? I go, what happened? You were knocked out.
And then you were like, I'll play baseball from this day forward, right?
So these two linebackers hit me.
Oh,
so
my goodness.
I told my coach at that very moment, I said, all right, from now on, I'm going both ways. There's no way I'm going to let somebody hit me like that I can't hit them back. So during that next week, I tried out as an outside left linebacker,
okay.
and I took the starting guy's job.
Okay.
So now I'm going both ways, and then that's when the fun really
I got you.
Came in. Now I could hit these guys back. So I was
right.
like, ooh.
You learned what you could do to retaliate,
yes,
basically,
is, this
right?
That's pretty good. That's
yeah.
pretty cool. Pretty
yeah.
cool. Pretty cool.
Yeah. But yeah. then we get to Ed Liberatore, who scouted you.
Yes.
And, tell me how impactful he was in your career. Because I know, didn't you go to his car and he signed you
yeah,
and he gave you some money for equipment and a new suit? I want to know about your suit.
No.
Because you've always been a very fly dresser. I need to know about your suit.
We had a, that was a pretty intense day because my mother is home, so she doesn't know any of this is going on. And her plan for me was to go to college. So I'm standing there and I'm like, oh boy. And my father wants me to sign. I go, Dad, Mom wants me to go to college. So all this is happening like in real time.
In one day.
It's not like, oh, I'll see you tomorrow. You know, it's right now.
It's one right
and,
now.
And so I'm looking at my father and going back and forth. So I ended up saying, okay, I'll sign. So he gave me a brand new glove. What did he give me? $500. Like I'm.
That was big time back then. Now, that was big time.
Yeah, but in my mind, I'm going from number one pick of the Phillies down to this, so it's kind of like, okay, fine. But all I wanted was a foot in the door at that point.
Right.
And then he gave me some money to get some clothing. And I was like, it was pretty cool. But in my mind and in my heart, I knew I had to go home. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm going to have to face mom.
Oh, my goodness.
And
how did that go?
That didn't go good.
Okay. Tell me a little bit more about that.
I mean, mom was happy, but, you know, I could see it on her face. She really wanted me to go to college.
Yeah.
And how, you know, why'd you guys make that decision so quick? And
yeah,
that kind of stuff. So we had to, you know, sit her down and tell her how it really went and how fast it happened and everything like that. And she always had this thing that she wasn't finished raising me yet. Cause I left home like the day after I graduated.
Oh,
I left.
That was too soon for
your
mom.
So I was a young 17.
Yeah.
And so
that must have been tough on her.
Yeah, it was tough on her.
And you know, we're from the same era basically. So for our parents, us getting an education was huge.
Yes. Yes.
After what they sacrificed for us. So I know that had to be hard for her. But she eventually came around, or what happened?
Yeah, she came around, but you know.
Took a minute?
Yeah, but she's mom, so she backed it up and she backed me up, and you know, the love was there, so.
Yeah.
She was always encouraging.
Yeah.
Always encouraging. But she always would remind me, you love too soon.
Oh.
You love too soon.
That was hanging over you for a while.
Yes,
yeah. So, how about coming out to California? Was that an issue for you? Were you a little bit reluctant about that? Because I know you had your heart set on being a Philly. And now you're coming to California, which is a whole different way of life. Tell me about that.
Well, I had to go through the minor leagues, you know, first. And then I got called up in 77 with the Dodgers. And so I really wasn't living in California yet. I was just there for a coffee break.
Okay.
And then from there, I was picked up by the Astros, so I'll go to the Astros and all that. And I had a pretty good first season. But me and the manager, we kind of like had a little issue there.
Oh, did you?
So I really wanted out. So, you know, I asked him to trade me and all that. And at the time, it's funny because Tony Siegel and Al Rosen were in Houston at this time.
That's crazy.
Yes, yes. So one day in 1981, Bill Vernon called me into the office, and he said, "You got your wish." I said, "Oh, okay." I go, "Where am I going?" And then he said, "San Francisco."
Yeah.
I was like, whoa. That changed my whole life that day.
Yeah, how'd you feel about that?
That was a special day. I almost fell down. I was like, "What? Really?" I was like, "Oh." Because as a kid, you know, I always went to Connie Mack Stadium.
Yeah.
And it seems though the Giants always hit more batting practice home runs, man. So we got all kinds of souvenirs.
And that's what you're looking at.
Yeah,
right?
I'm like, man, the Giants, you know, so I was ecstatic.
Okay, Jeffrey, if you don't mind, share with me your journey from the Astros to the Giants. Because I know that was hugely emotional for you. And there's a great story behind this as well as to how you got one of your many nicknames.
Oh, okay. wow. Okay, so the Dodgers made a trade with the Astros for Joe Ferguson with Rafael Landestor and a player to be named later. So nobody knows who this player is going to be.
Okay.
So in my mind at that time, I'm just assuming I'm going to be a Dodger. I was the minor league player of the year in 78 and all this. And so at the end of the year, Del Crandall calls us all in, and he calls all the guys who got called up, and he doesn't mention my name. So everybody's kind of like looking at me and everything. And I'm like, whoa, really? And he said, I don't know what to tell you, man. So I said, okay, fine. So, you know, again, I'm upset. So instead of going home, I go to Portland. So I'm in Portland for like 4 or 5 days.
Oh, my goodness.
I didn't call anyone, you know, and I just
laid low.
I just laid low.
Uh-huh.
just chill a little bit. I happened to call home, and my father,
uh-oh.
My father goes, where are you?
You didn't even reach out to your dad.
Everybody's trying to find you. I go, what do you mean everybody's trying to find me? He goes, but you've been traded. I go, really? And he told me the Astros. I was like, oh, wow. And, you know, the Dodgers are trying to find me and, you know, and all that. And I go, well, you know, well, what do you want me to do? And they wanted me to meet the Astros on the road. So I asked my father, well, where am I going? And he says, I had to go to L.A. Astros were playing the Dodgers. And I was like, oh, wow. So, you know, I fly to L.A. And we play that night. So in L.A., they had these magazines that, you know, has all the minor league players and all the prospects and, you know, the guys are being called up. So I had been there in 77, so now I'm still in this book. So, you know, just the fact that I'm coming back after, what, 6 years, mm-hmm. and I'm not, you know, going to be a Dodger. Mm-hmm. So I remember my the first game, my first at-bat, I'm walking up to home plate, and I got to stand an ovation. And
of course you did.
It lasted a pretty long time. Wow. It was very, very, very emotional.
Yeah.
I mean, it you know, I took my helmet and everything, and
wow.
they, you know, they recognized, you know, my 6 years in the minor leagues, right. and everything. And I don't know, then right after that, something just happened inside that I'm going to kill the Doctor.
And we love that as Giants fans. We love that.
It happened quick. I'm wow. like, oh, okay. Okay, I see how it is now.
Because
right.
of how they treated you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I go to the Astros and had a pretty good first year and, you know, came in second in the rookie of the year and all that. And then the second year, I had an issue with Bill Verdon. He wanted me to come off the bench again and all that. Now I was like, wait a minute, I'll hit everybody there this year. Anyway, it was a really, really hard time. Yeah. So he kind of stuck it to me.
Wow.
He really did. But one of the things we'll probably talk about a little later that got me going for what was to happen in the future. So then I get traded over. He calls me in. Going to the Giants, I am completely done. I'm like probably the happiest I have been, actually. And so it was a 2-for-1 deal.
Okay.
So it was Bill Bergman, Dave Bergman, and myself
okay.
for Mike Ivey.
Okay.
So I'm all ready to go to the big leagues. And
right.
Bill Bergman goes, oh, and by the way, they only have room for one of you guys. And you still have an option. So they had to take Dave. I go, what does that mean? He goes, you're going to Phoenix.
Oh, my gosh. So now your dreams are shattered again.
So I've only had like almost 3 years in big leagues. So
yeah.
I go down to Phoenix with the Firebirds. Oh, you know I was upset. But, you know, I ended up meeting Chili and Brindley and all these guys.
Yeah.
That's how I met them.
Yeah.
So I come into the clubhouse, and that's how I was started. Before I got to San Francisco, I went to Phoenix first.
Okay.
And then, wouldn't you know it, they go on strike. So now I still have to wait, but that's how that happened. Yeah.
Wow, yeah. Wow. Okay, we have to talk about minor leagues in 1981 when the Hackman nickname, when that handle came up. Wasn't that Max Venable, a couple of your teammates? Please tell me how that happened. Because you have some wonderful nicknames, but that's the one I think we all associate with you the most, so we kind of credit Max Venable with that. Tell me about that.
Oh, wow. Made me sound bad.
No, not at all.
When I came to Phoenix, I was upset. So I met with the manager, Rocky Bridges. Nice guy, really nice guy. And I go, Rocky, you know, right now, man, I'm not taking infield. I'm not taking batting practice. I'm not doing anything but getting dressed, coming to the game, play the game, and go back to the hotel.
You were angry.
And he says, that's fine. That's fine. Whatever you want to do. I go, okay. So I come, you know, I started playing. And at first, I wasn't even thinking about it. But 3 or 4 games had gone by. And I had swung at the first pitch every time.
Every time, yes.
So I hadn't been coming to batting practice, so one day I show up, and everybody's like, whoa! And Max Venable and Guy Soulard, we sat around talking, man. And I said, I'm going up to the plate every time. The rest of the time I'm here, I'm swinging at the first pitch, and whatever happens, happens. And Matt says, man, you always hacking, man. And Sudar said, man, you always hacking. That was it.
Right.
Up until that point, you know, I didn't have that name. So right after the strike, they called me up. So I go up, and about a month or so, you know, after that, they called those guys up. So they brought that nickname with them.
Mm-hmm.
So they come into the clubhouse and they're calling me Hackman and all this. So I thought it was funny.
Right.
And it stuck.
Yes, it stuck.
It actually stuck.
But initially you didn't like it was spelled H-A-C-K.
Yeah, once I took it on, you know, they had the little game out, Pac-Man, and I thought it was cool, you know, P-A-C, bam, M-A-N. I said, yeah, so I'm going to spell Hack, H-A-C,
yes,
M-A-N.
Yeah.
That's how that happened. Yeah.
So Jeffrey, as I'm hearing from you, you played with a little chip on your shoulder from time to time.
Just a little one.
Just a little bit. But do you kind of credit your dad with helping you develop your on-field demeanor? Because you were super intimidating. and I read that you said you would just come to the field teed off, that baseball is war, and you came out there just angry. Tell me about that, and where did all that anger come from?
when I played football, we would be driving to the, visiting team's field. And some point of that drive, my football coach would always say, okay, it's quiet time right now.
Mm.
We're like, quiet time?
Right.
But what he meant was, take this time right now, get yourself ready, get mentally ready.
Focus.
And focus and prepare for what's going to happen. So I kind of took that, you know, coupled with the lessons my father had taught me.
Right.
So when I played in the minor leagues, it was the same thing. You know, I had just as much fun as anybody. I mean, I was a jokester, too, but...
Well, we didn't know that.
at a certain point, you know, everybody knew not to mess with me. You know, I'm in that zone or whatever you want to call it.
Right.
And I was getting my game face on, and that's basically how that happened.
Yeah. So you just hit the field just angry, and it worked to your advantage.
Well, you know, there were a couple times I had gotten up early in the ball game. I remember one time in particular, it was the bases were loaded, and I struck out.
Mm.
And when I struck out, it took me to another level mentally and emotionally. And now I'm ready to play. So it took me striking out with the bases loaded to get me there. And I said, wait a second, I need to start the game like that.
Got
I need to go into the game with that frame of mind, work that into my pregame routine, get ready for war.
Got you.
So that's what I would do. And especially in Cal State, I would go down to the 49ers locker room with my headphones on and just walking around, trying to get myself up.
Like your football mentality.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Prior to that, I'm on the field joking around, playing around with Kuko and Kipe and all those guys all the time. But they knew when they saw me with my headphones on, done.
Stay away.
Stay away.
Stay away. Away.
Yeah.
Well, now, when you came to the Giants, you struggled early on. How frustrating was that for you? I mean, when you were on fire, you were on fire. But when you weren't, you really struggled. How frustrating was that for you? Or was it?
I don't remember.
Uh-oh. Here we go.
I don't remember. When I came to the Giants, Frank Ralphson was the manager. And we had a lot of outfielders. I mean, it was a bunch of us. It must have been like 8 or 9 guys in
there.
Max, Chili, Larry Herndon. I mean, all these guys were in there. Jack Clark. And he goes, okay, this is how we're going to do it. I'm going to put 3 guys out there. Whoever has the worst game is not playing the next night.
Oh, okay, that fired you up.
So we're all sitting around like, okay, so what's on? So it's like a little competition thing. So we go through the whole meeting. So then right at the end, I go, Frank, I have a question. And he goes, what do you have? I go, well, let's say the 2 other outfielders were 3 for 4. And I came up and I hit the game-winning home run. Who's going to sit? Frank,
what'd he say?
Ran us all out of the room. I was like, I thought it was a real good question.
I thought so,
I wanted
too,
to know.
Yeah, right.
But that's how it started. And then You know, because I was coming there after playing in the Astrodome, so now I got to deal with Candlestick.
Oh, my gosh.
So prior to this happening, well, obviously, I was one of the guys that wanted to come in there and get out of there.
Right.
So now it's my home. So I had to deal, you know, learn how to play that outfield,
yeah.
Learn how to play the wind,
yeah.
And all that. Because I remember actually diving for a ball. And I just assumed that I'm going to catch this. And I missed that ball by 5 feet.
Oh, my goodness.
Ball just kept going. I remember Lowell Cohn wrote a little article, man.
And oh, the great Lowell Cohn.
I cut that out.
You did.
And taped it in my locker. Because in my mind, I was a pretty good outfielder. So,
right.
And I was looking like a rookie out here.
And you did not like that.
And no, I didn't like
no.
that. So I told Lowell Cohn, in just a little while, I'm going to take you in my locker, and you're going to take it down. I'm going to prove to you that I can play the outfield here.
I love that. You gave yourself your own bulletin board material.
Oh, for sure.
Right?
For sure.
Right?
Yeah.
It's hecka windy today, which is reminding me of Candlestick. But really, talk about the challenges of playing there.
Tremendous challenges.
Oh, my goodness.
You had to constantly always check the grass, throw the grass in the air to see how it was blowing. And a lot of times, the wind might be blowing stronger, a little higher than it would be lower, or vice versa. I mean, the dust, the hot dog wrappers, and all that. But it took you to another place mentally.
Yeah.
So it made me stronger, and it made all of us stronger at that point. You know, especially when Roger Craig came, it was a whole different game.
Tell me about the difference between, if there is even, playing for Frank Robinson and playing for Hum Baby Roger Craig.
Was there a difference? It was a huge difference.
Was there a huge difference?
Frank Robinson was really, he was a tough guy.
Yeah.
But it didn't bother me. I liked it. You know, what we had, you know, our relationship was cool, you know, the way he talked and everything. But at the same time, I understood how it might have been a little harsh on some of the other players. But for me, it worked. So it's kind of, so I was.
Well, you already learned from your dad how to be like hardcore and and face that adversity. Your dad instilled that in you already.
Yeah.
So yeah. And Hum Baby Roger Craig had your back.
Yeah, he was a whole different thing.
Yeah.
You know, Frank was straightforward, straight up, in your face. Here it is. Roger comes in. Wow. I remember that. So Roger comes in. Al Rosen's there. So now I'm in the same situation now. Al Rosen is here now. He just traded me from Houston. So I'm going like, oh, okay. So they want to introduce Roger to the team. So Roger comes in. And he just went head first. He went, no, this is going to change. This is going to change. This is going to change. If anybody doesn't want to be here, raise your hands right now.
Oh.
And we were like, whoa, he was rolling. I was like, wow, okay. So he's going on and on and on. And it was a really, really good first meeting.
Right.
Until he got to the end of it.
Uh-oh.
So at the time, if you remember, you know, you could wear the high stirrups and the high pants, kind of like Vita Blue and all that.
Absolutely.
Roger Craig gets right at the end of his speech, and he goes, another thing, you're going to start wearing the uniforms correctly.
Oh.
We're going to show black part of our socks. So all the heads go like, whoosh. We all look over at Vita. He's sitting there with his high stirrups. We go, what are you going to do, V? What are you going to do, V? It was off the hook.
That's
funny.
Hilarious.
So, you know, I thought I was in the clear, you know. It's all good. So I'm standing up at my locker, and Roger goes, oh, and one more thing. We're going to wear our hats the right way.
Mm-mm.
So at this time, you know, I was known for wearing my hat backwards
mm-hmm.
during practice.
He did not like that.
So Roger goes, so then all the heads go, boom.
Looking at
they
you.
All look at me.
Right.
So I'm just standing there going like, you're going to be pretty. And I didn't say a word. So Al Rosen brings Roger around to each of us individually, and he meets us all, comes around, comes around, comes around, comes around, and he gets to my locker. And he goes, you know, I know who you are, you know, and I have, you know, great respect for you, and, you know, how, you know, best, you know, best left fielder in the league and all this kind of stuff. I'm going, okay, he's going somewhere with this.
Right.
He goes, as a matter of fact, my daughter just last night told me, Dad, you can't make him do that because he's known for that. And I go, excuse me? He goes, I just want you to know that this was a hard decision. And I'll go like, oh, okay. Well, that made it a little bit better.
So he let it be.
So now it's time to go out on the field.
Okay, okay.
So my coach and staff comes up to me and they go, Jeffrey, what are you going to do, man? What are you going to do? I go, I don't know yet, man. I don't know yet. So everybody's running out. They're going on the field. I'm waiting. So I was the last one to come out. So everybody waiting for me to come out of that tunnel. So I came to the edge of the tunnel. I still had it on backwards. Uh-huh. And then when I got on the stair, you know, the steps, I turned it around. And that basically was let them know that, you know, I was on board.
I'm going to be a team player right now.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. But in the meeting, you know, he brought up Candlestick. We're going to turn it around. We're going to make this our home. But we have to first love it. We have to get it in. Get on board and get it, just grab it and embrace it. That changed everybody's head.
Wow.
Changed the whole landscape of the whole thing. It really hit home that, you know, because I was one of the guys who used to say, man, let's play these three games and go, man, let's get out of here. But we flipped it. So we already knew guys and teams that would come in wanted to leave. So let's put it on them.
Right, it's but our house, so we're going to show you how we play here.
But he made it a big point to make sure that we had to fall in love with our own house.
Wow, so he really changed the culture
when
he came.
Yes, he did. He changed the culture. He changed.
Let me just ask you about Frank Robinson. Do you think he was so hardcore because he made history and he was the first? Did that seem to resonate at all for you?
I didn't think he was that bad.
Okay.
So, you know, I would hear some of my teammates, you know, talk about it, and you know, he wanted Jack Clark to be a leader, but Jack wasn't like a verbal guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's more by what he would do,
right?
You know, and how he would excite you,
right?
Late inning home run or something like that. But he wanted more. Coming from a guy like Frank Robinson who had done it all, you know, who knows what he could see in you. You can see things inside you that you didn't even know you had yourself. So that's why I looked at him. But he was straightforward. So
right.
Maybe the straightforwardness was a little bit too hard.
Y'all weren't really used to that. But
yeah.
He probably felt a lot of pressure, I would imagine, though, you know. But you thrived under Roger Craig, and he said that you were a natural leader. And he brought in the youth movement with Will Clark and Robbie Thompson, and he specifically told you veterans, I need you to take care of these kids, right?
Yeah. Yes, he did.
Right?
Yes, he did.
And Will Clark said you were a tremendous mentor to the young people. And that goes back to your dad teaching you to kind of be a natural-born leader. Tell me about you, you know, how did you mentor and teach the young players, and did you kind of embrace that role?
I didn't think it was a role. I was just something
you were
that,
just doing what you
like
do.
You said, I was doing what I do.
Right.
I learned obviously the foundation from my father and all that. When I went to Los Angeles, they were pretty good guys over there. So they kind of took me through the ropes. Junior Gilliam, Moy Wills, Dusty Baker, Reggie Smith,
yes.
Garvey, all these guys.
Yes.
They really, you know, taught us how to act in the big leagues. And I just took, and so now I had some other place to grab something from.
Gotcha.
So I grabbed my lessons from how they treated me.
Yeah.
And all that. So when I had my chance, you know, I remember Robbie Thompson in spring training.
Oh, good. Oh, I'm excited for this story. Tell me.
So we're in spring training, and I don't remember everything, but Brad Wellman was slated to be the starter. And he was a pretty good infield himself. And we had another young kid named Woodard. He's going to be the backup.
Okay.
So Brad, at the time, he's having a really good spring training. And he must be hitting close to 400.
Wow.
And he gets hurt. And they call over to the minor league camp, yo, send somebody over here. Here comes Robbie Thompson, the way I remember it. So we just, we said, oh, yeah, another little, guy. And man, we watched him take infield.
Uh-oh.
And we saw him, and then all of a sudden, Roger put him in the game. And I was like, whoa. I was like, oh, boy. He was like, he caught everybody's eye off the bat. I mean, straight up.
Wow.
I remember at least twice I went into the trainer's room and I said, Brad, you better get back on the field.
Uh-oh.
That's how good Robbie was.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's the way I remember him, man. And he would ask, like, well, do you think I'm going to make the team? I go, man, you better get you an apartment already, and all that. You definitely gone.
Wow.
So anyway, that's my fun part with him. Will was cool, too. But Will had swag. He came in.
With swag.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He came in with swag.
Yes.
He wasn't like Robbie. Robbie's, like, more reserved and stayed back very, very quiet. Will was kind of quiet, but Will knew he belonged.
Right.
And that was kind of cool. So that's how that little dynamic went. But, they would talk about different pitchers and different idiosyncrasies and how they would pitch you and what to look for in different situations and that and so on. And I would always, if I could answer you, I would answer them, but the main thing I told them both was, you're a second baseman, you're a first baseman, I'm an outfielder. I go, we could have fun just knowing our positions, but we can have way more fun if we learn the whole game.
Oh, my goodness.
So learn everybody's position, where so-and-so is supposed to be, or what a pitcher should be doing. So you will always have a conversation. You always have something to say. If you're going to be a leader or a role model, especially in baseball, on the field, how can I go up to a second baseman and say anything to him if I don't know how second basemen are supposed to function? But, at that time, because of my father, I knew the whole game. I'm sorry that we bypassed that story, because it was a pretty good one, because going back in the minor leagues, I remember I learned all the cutoffs and relays.
Okay.
I'm feeling on top of the world.
Yes.
I call home, Pops is on the other line, I said, Dad, I know all the cutoffs and relays, I got it all down, and I got no response, nothing. I go, hello? He goes, I'm here. I go, oh, okay. He goes, let me ask you something. I go, yeah. He goes, well, where's the third baseman go? Where does the shortstop go? Do you have a double cut? What's the right fielder doing? And I was like, oh, you got to be kidding me. And so in other words, he was telling me, you go back, read that book again,
right,
and learn everybody's position. Learn the whole game.
Right.
That's where I got that from.
Right.
And that stuck all the way through. I thought I was like, yeah.
Yeah, but no, Daddy told you. Daddy checked you.
Daddy, yeah, he checked me straight up.
But then later in your career, it served you well.
Yes.
You and your teammates.
Yes.
That's amazing. So Daddy's lessons were always there.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Let's talk about the 1984 season. That was a monster season for you. At one point, you were hitting .484, which is ridiculous. 21 home runs, 86 RBIs. 1984, do you remember what had you so locked in that year?
Well, I changed a lot of stuff, in my batting stance, and I changed a lot of stuff in my mind as well.
Mm.
But,
because the game is as much mental as it is physical.
Yes, it is.
Let's be clear, right?
It was. I got tired of people saying, well, you don't hit the ball out of the ballpark and, so on. And I really took that to heart. And then at the time, I was real close to Jack Clark. And prior to, he introduced me to his agent and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And we became friends. And we just talked a lot about going to the next level. And I just worked hard. I learned how to drive the ball and stay through the ball. So that made a big difference. So then once I did it the first time, of course everybody's gonna say, well, can you hit 20 again and all that? So that put the chip on my shoulder again.
Yeah, yeah. And then the following season, your average dropped, and that was the year that the Giants lost 100 games. How tough, talk to me about, were you able to keep yourself motivated, your teammates motivated? How tough was that?
That was real tough.
I can't imagine.
And that was, yeah. But I can say this. We never thought that we would lose 100 games. We were saying, like, as a matter of fact, no way.
Right.
And it kept getting closer and closer. And it was amazing that, you know, the little bit of fans that came out, they were so supportive. I mean, like 4,000 or 5,000 people. And
we had
all kind of meetings and everything. And like, man, it was really, really hard. But, you know, as a team, we just kept confident. We tried to stay positive and all that. But there's a lot of pressure, a lot of weight on us and all that. Who wants to lose 100 games? And we didn't feel that we had a team that bad.
Right.
But, of course, it happened. But I think we became a little bit closer. We spent more time in the clubhouse talking to one another and like the old days.
Yeah, I would imagine that you could go either way on that. You guys either become closer or you guys break apart.
Yeah.
So it brought you all, team chemistry probably developed even more so.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, for sure.
That's great.
Especially the guys that stayed for the following year.
Yeah.
And then the rest of it was history. You know?
Yeah.
But that particular season right there was a tough one. I mean, but we learned a lot. We grew a lot. We came closer. We appreciated the game more.
Mm.
We appreciated the fans more. I mean, a lot of stuff changed that year. So it was a lot of good that came out of that.
Yeah.
But,
it probably humbled you all as well,
oh,
right?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So tell me about the following season, what the mindset was and how everything changed in 86.
Well, you know, Rogers already pretty much didn't change that. But, yeah, everybody was on the same note, same mindset. We were all happy. We had a great spring, and everything was coming together. We're just missing a few pieces.
Yeah.
But the atmosphere had changed. You could just feel it.
Yeah.
It was like, wow. And we didn't even really think about we just lost 100 games. We knew it, but those of us who stayed, you know, who were still here,
you guys had
changed.
Already bonded.
Yes.
And knew that you needed to improve from that.
Yes.
And Roger Craig said that following season, he praised you so much as a natural-born leader and spoke so much about how the younger players really looked up to you. Did he talk to you about that, or did you know he felt that way about you?
Yeah, he did. He, you know, a lot of times, well, I would play hurt, so that's the way I was raised. I came up.
He said you would play with a broken leg if you had to. That's what Roger Craig said about you, Jeffrey Leonard.
Yeah. Roger was a great motivator.
He had a huge impact on you.
Yeah. Yes, he did.
Yeah.
He was a strategist. He was a great motivator. I mean, there was a lot of times where I didn't have to go down to the 49er room. I would stay up there because he'd have a little meeting or something. But, you know, he had a watchful eye. So I didn't know that he was even looking at me doing certain things or saying certain things and all this.
That was the beauty of him, right?
And yes.
Yeah.
And I it really hit my heart one day. I was hurt, and he came in. He called me into the office, and he goes, listen, he says, I know you're hurt and all that. He said, but I need for you to go out there. And I was like, fine. You know, he says, if you go out there, they're going to see you go out there. Huh? You're going to raise their expectations of them of themselves. And so I was like, okay, you know, but I was going to play anyway, but he called me in the office and he said that, and it touched my heart. And at the time I didn't tell him, but I was very touched. And so I started that game hurt, and that was partly who I was,
right.
But the point that he saw me like that.
Him sharing that with you had an impact.
Yes, sharing like that
and
doing that meant a lot to me. Meant a whole lot.
And you meant a lot to him because he actually compared your character to that of Jackie Robinson.
Whoa. I didn't know that.
He said that about you. So let that resonate for a minute, okay? What do you think about that?
Wow.
That's how highly he thought of you, Jeffrey Leonard. He compared you to the great Jackie Robinson.
It's unbelievable.
Right? He had a lot of faith in you, and you guys had a great relationship.
Yes, we did.
Yeah,
yes,
that's amazing.
Yes.
You had relationships. You had some amazing teammates. I just want to go through some of them and get your get your feedback. How about Bob Brindley? Bob Brindley said, if Jeffrey didn't cuss at you, he didn't like you.
Wait a minute.
Okay? Basically,
that
you know.
That sound like him.
Right?
That sound like Bo.
Basically, if you weren't on them, then you didn't have anything to do with them. So tell me about Bob Brindley.
Brindley was, I love Brindley. Brindley was, he was a good ball player, obviously. He was a great catcher. Tough as nails. I mean, he could actually beat up a trash can better than a whole lot of guys.
What? Bob Brindley?
Oh, my goodness.
That's fantastic.
He go in the hallway with his bat. Bam, bam. Oh, Bobby's back there. But, no, he was a great teammate.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
He was cool. I mean, it's baseball. There's a lot of cursing going on or whatever, you
really?
Know. I mean, you know, people talking mess, but I might have gone overboard a few times.
Might you have? Okay, you're right. How about Vida? Tell me about Vida Blue.
Boy. Yeah, Vida was great.
He also had a lot of swag himself, right?
Yeah, Vida had super swag. Super swag. Vida, yeah, he was cool. He was, again, another great teammate.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of fun. We used to laugh about the times I faced him and all that, but just playing with him.
Yeah.
You know, you start watching guys and start to watch their work ethic. You can compare it to yourself, and you always can find something to take. Oh, okay, that's how you did that. Let me take that a little bit. Let me take that. Vida Blue was one of those kind of guys, man.
Yeah.
So you know, he commanded respect.
Yeah.
It was just there. You know,
yeah.
He
his presence.
Room, y'all,
yeah.
For sure. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
How about Dave Dravecki?
Dave Dravecki. Double D.
Double D.
Yeah, it was cool. When they came over, you know, everybody's like, oh, man. Because a good friend of mine, Chris Brown, had gotten traded in that mix. So
right.
I was kind of like, oh.
With Dravecki and Kevin Mitchell. Yeah.
And Greg Lefferts,
right.
Those guys. And at the time, there was a lot of talk about, you know, Bibles and all this and being church guys and all that. You know, I don't know where it started or anything like that. It didn't mean anything to me because, you know, my own beliefs. So they come over and we meet them. And, I mean, it didn't take them long at all. I mean, maybe a game, two. And it felt like they had been there.
Wow.
The whole time.
Right.
And then Dave is such a dynamic guy himself,
right?
Friendly and as real as you're gonna get. So it was like, bam!
Right.
I gotta tip my hat to Roger and, you know, and Al Rosen, because they couldn't have picked three players to bring on their team that could mesh that quickly, like, and became part of that family. I mean, like, almost, you know, immediately.
Yeah.
But he was a great competitor.
Yeah.
He was hard to hit off of, first of all. And it was good that, you know, he's on our team now, so I didn't have to face him. But great teammate, yeah.
That was also, again, the genius of Roger Craig, because when I talked to Dave Dravecki, he told me how Roger Craig brought the three of them in and said, you are the three missing pieces of our puzzle. So he embraced them immediately and had them feel comfortable and let them know that we want you here. Because he said they were devastated to get traded from San Diego. But that was the beauty of Roger Craig. He was like, you're the missing parts.
Yep.
We need you and we want you. And so that's probably why they fit so seamlessly, right?
Yes, yes.
Home baby. Okay, let's talk about Matt Williams.
Maddie.
Talk about Maddie.
Maddie actually, come on, I think he came up and then they sent him back.
Okay.
Again, great, young, and I really didn't know what position he had signed as. So one day we're on the field and we just messing around and he goes over to shortstop. I go, man, you can't put no dad on a shortstop. And he's over there just picking it. Looking like ooh. And then the joke was on me because he signed as a shortstop.
Right.
So I was like, oh my God, he was off the hook.
Yeah.
Again, quiet, reserved, was taking everything in. You know, very knowledgeable. You know. Very, very high baseball IQ.
Let his play speak for itself.
Yep,
like
yep,
you.
Yep. Yep. He worked hard, real hard.
Wow.
Great work ethic. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then The rest is history.
The rest is history.
He turned into a serious beast.
Yeah.
So
he did.
Yes, he did.
And
yes,
still
he
one
did.
Of our most beloved yes. Giants of all time, as yes. are you, yes. as are Kruk and Kipe, our beloved broadcasters, also your teammates. Mike Kruko said he would go to war with you any day. He said it would take a minute to kind of get through that rough exterior and get to know you. But once you did, you were loyal, you were faithful, and he said he would go to battle any day with you. Tell me about Kruk and Kipe.
I feel the same way.
Oh.
He's my main guy. I liked him a lot, man, actually. We had a little signs going in the outfield. Like, you know, I would, like, if he saw me, like, throw some grass up, he knew the wind was blowing out, so he would stay away. Or if he saw me just standing there, he knew that he could throw the ball inside. So we had like little signs and all that. But my probably the biggest asset that I thought he had was the fact that he was a workhorse.
Hmm.
It seemed though he would always take us into the sixth or the seventh inning, and either we're winning by one, tied, or losing by one, we were always in the ball game when Kruko was pitching. So I really admire that
yeah.
about him. So I try to take a little bit of that. I go, okay, because he always took the ball.
Yeah.
And he was a hardcore competitor.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, outside of the fact that, you know, him and Kipe was so, whew, okay. Anyway, so Kipe.
Tell me more.
Kipe was a slick fielding little second baseman, man. I liked him too.
Yeah.
Always encouraging.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He's one of the best bunters I've ever seen.
Nice.
Yeah. He always had encouraging words.
Yeah.
Always was there for you. But you also knew, like, when you came into the dugout, and if Kruko wasn't pitching and Kipe wasn't playing, I'm not going to sit anywhere near them. Because something's going on.
Oh, okay. That's good to know.
Something's going on. I sit way over there. Because I knew if I sit over there, you know, something's going to happen. I'll lose my focus. I'll start thinking about some, you know, something that they said, or somebody's shoestrings on fire or anything like that. You know, they had all the pranks going.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
So
yeah.
They were already quite the duo then.
Oh, yes, they were.
Yeah,
yes,
that's great.
Were. Oh, for sure.
That's great.
For sure.
So it probably doesn't surprise you, the chemistry that they have in
no,
the booth right now?
Not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all. It's all natural and it's all real.
Yeah, it's all real.
They act just like that.
That's hilarious.
When they play.
That's hilarious.
And he always says, "Ever sweet meat," and all that. That was way back then.
He's really?
All the time, man. He was meeting everybody.
Everybody was meat.
Everybody was meat.
Oh, my God. That's amazing. There's a lot of lightning in the bottle team chemistry there with y'all then.
Yeah.
All right. We have to get to 1987, the NLCS against the Cardinals, a seven-game series. Arguably one of the best postseasons ever by you, Mr. Jeffrey Leonard. That was the Jeffrey Leonard show. 10 hits, 4 home runs, 5 RBI, .417 batting average, .917 slugging percentage. What was going on with you? What in the world? As my daddy, my late father, would have said, you were unconscious.
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 Oh, wow. I had gone to the championship series with Houston against Philadelphia in 80.
Against your hometown Phillies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And since I had that thing going on with Bill Verdon, he kind of stuck it to me and didn't play me.
Mm.
And it crushed me. And I can clearly remember telling myself, you know, if I ever get in a situation like this again, I'm going to be playing and I'm gonna take full advantage of it. You know, not knowing that was going to happen.
Yeah.
But that's what I told myself then. So we go to 87. Going into that series, I was in a slump. And, you know, for me, the season and the postseason is different.
Okay.
And
tell me about that a little bit more.
Yeah, well, you know.
You take it up a notch in the post?
You have to take it up a notch.
Got you.
So the way I remember it, I wasn't in the starting lineup.
Okay. Oh, okay.
And we were in St. Louis. And I saw the lineup on the wall.
I love this story.
So I just
snatched it.
Tore the lineup card down.
Right.
And I had come to the ballpark with Chili Davis. So we coming together and I said, "Chili, I'm going in there." He goes, "Man, really?" I go, "Yeah, I'm going in there." Going in there means going to talk to Roger Craig, which getting him to change his mind, It's like really, really rare.
That was challenging, right?
Yes, but I went in that room and I closed that door and I really told him how I felt, you know. I pleaded with him. I said, I have to play.
You pleaded your case.
I pleaded my case.
Yeah.
And he said, okay. And I guess the rest is history. So when I came out, I said, Chili, you gonna go in? Because he wasn't in the lineup either. He goes, oh, no, I'm not going to.
He was like, you can't duplicate what you did. Only one time it'll
like,
happen.
Oh, my God, it was funny,
wow.
Man.
Wow, wow.
So I don't know. I was somewhere else. You know, if I could go back in time, you know, I probably would have had a team meeting or something and tried to explain to my teammates how I was really feeling.
Yeah.
Because something was inside of me. I was just driven.
Yeah.
And I didn't even care about anything. We're going to get this done.
Yeah.
So that's how it went. And then I got mad about something, you know, how far up our fans were sitting. And I don't know. I said, well, if I happen to hit a home run today, I'm going to take my sweet ass, sweet time.
Oh, bleep that.
Go to Rockies bases.
And you did. And One Flap Down was born.
No, it wasn't born then.
Okay,
no,
it was close then. To being born.
No, basically, we had to go back a year.
Okay.
86. Roger Craig gives me a day off against the Cubs.
Uh-oh.
And it's against, who's pitching? Scott Sanderson's pitching. I go, Roger.
You want to be in there.
You're going to give me an off day. It's got to be against Nolan Ryan or somebody.
Right.
You're going to sit me down for this?
Right.
So anyway, he calls me in to pitch hit in the sixth or seventh inning. Jose Uribe is on base and Robbie Thompson's on base.
Okay.
And he hangs the curveball and I hit a three-run homer. So I'm jogging down to first. And Jose Morales is the first base coach.
Oh, yeah.
And normally he's there with his little high five.
He messed with you.
He messed with me. So he's just sitting back, blah, 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 blah. So I'm getting closer to the bag. So I got right to the bag. And I hit the corner, and he throws his hand up. So I leaned over like that to hit his hand, and this arm falls down. I just jog around the field, just like that, all the way around. But
with that arm down.
If you saw the actual film,
yeah.
When I got to home plate, I gave everybody, you know, high five.
But nobody was paying attention to that.
High five, right. So the next day I come out, Ryan Sandberg and Thad Bosley, hey, how's your arm? And I'm going like, huh? What? Oh, no, nothing. No, there's nothing wrong. That was it.
Because you had forgotten about that by then.
What do you think about it?
Yeah.
Nobody said a word.
That's hilarious.
We go into 87 in spring training. I'm sitting around the clubhouse and Kenny Maldonado goes, hey, Hack, remember that time you hit that home run and you did a little thing? I go, oh, yeah. If I hit one that day, I'll do it. So we're in Scottsdale.
Uh-huh.
Bam, I hit it and I do it. Here comes Al Rosen.
Uh-oh.
He comes flying downstairs. What are you doing? You're going to get hurt. You're going to get hit. I go, Roger, I'm not afraid of any of that. It was just fun. You know,
you were having fun.
The guy
right.
was having fun. Maybe a couple of weeks later, it comes up again. I'll do it again. This is all in spring training.
Okay.
And that was it.
Okay.
Season starts. I'm not even thinking about this thing.
Right.
It has no bearing on anything. And then we go to St. Louis. And I don't know.
Those fans.
So when I came around.
They were merciless on you.
When I saw the reaction, the fans were. I was like, whoa.
Because you said you couldn't even get to second base and they were already on you.
They were lighting me up, man. I go, okay, well, it's on now. If I hit another one, I'm going to sure do something worse. So that's how it started. It started in 86, and then I carried it, you know, over into that series. And then it was just named by Joe Garagiola.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was broadcasting it, and that's what he said.
Well, he did the interview with me,
yeah.
He goes, well, what do you call that? I go,
what do you call what? Because you're still
what do you
not
call what?
You're not knowing that you're
I'm
doing this.
I'm about this thing. He goes, what do you call the arm thing? I go, man, I don't call it anything. He said, well, flap down, one flap down. I go, you want to roll with that? That's fine, you know. And then so then it just stuck.
Yeah, yeah, but the Cardinals did not like it, and you got hit. Was it game 3 that the pitcher hit you in the back?
Oh. Let me see. That
because you were like just hitting home run after home run after home run.
Yeah.
Right? Game. Like I think four consecutive. And that pitcher was like, oh no, I'm getting you in the back.
Force.
Right? Yes.
It's all in the game. You know, it was all in the game. I expected to get hit.
You knew that was coming.
I didn't know when, but I knew I was.
Right.
You know, they had to do something.
Right.
You know. But
because you were killing, you were crushing them.
And then they poured all the beer on me in St. Louis. I'm like, come on.
Well, we know St. Louis. Those fans are ridiculous. They love their baseball.
Yes.
They love their Cardinals.
Yes, they do.
And then you end up, the Giants lose the series in seven games, but you are like the last player to be named the MVP of the NLCS for the losing team. And as I understand it, you don't even have that. You don't even have possession of that trophy. You don't even want it, right?
That was a rough time. I was sitting in the clubhouse, and we're all, like, stunned. Because we just knew we were the best team.
Right.
Like, we thought that we should have won the whole thing.
Right. And you fought so
hard. Oh, my goodness. So we're sitting there, and the guy comes in, and, you know, and they want to see me and all that. And I get up, and I go over there, and he told me.
From MLB?
Yeah. So I was like, really? You know, like that.
That was the last thing on your mind, right?
Yeah, I wasn't even thinking about you know. And so I walked out into the hallway, and, you know, I'm going down, and Lori and them. Cox, the pitcher of the Cardinals, is on his way to interview right after me. Mm-hmm. And then so we meet in the hallway and he tells me, congratulations, man, you know, you clearly earned it, blah, 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 blah. You know, we just exchanged little pleasantries, but I was destroyed inside.
You were hot.
So I had to stand there in front of, you know, in front of all the media and, you know, accept this trophy and, you know, everything like that. And,
I bet you didn't want to.
No. I couldn't even enjoy that.
Right.
So I come back to the clubhouse. I put it in my locker. And, you know, the guys, you know, way to go, Hack. And I was like, whatever. You know, I was like, so to this day, no, I don't have it up. I gave it to my stepson.
Yeah.
So, you know, I would look at that thing and always a bad memory, a bad taste.
It's so one thing to win that, but but beyond that, you want to win the championship.
Yes,
I get it.
Yes.
So,
you know, it was a great honor to win it and all that and be the last guy after, I don't know, what, 31 years or something?
Yeah.
All that's cool, but the memories that's, you know, that reside in my heart are way beyond that. Yeah.
As the years went on, were you able to appreciate it more, or still you're just like, I just can't accept it because the loss was so devastating? Or have you kind of settled with it over the years? Because you were on fire. You did deserve it. Let's be clear.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
I came to accept it, but it still was like a marker. It
leaves a bad taste.
Yes, it still said you did not win.
Mm.
And Ozzy went on to the World Series.
Yeah, he's not too shabby, that Ozzy Smith guy, right? He's pretty good, right?
Yeah, that's how that went.
Wow.
But it was an honor, but I couldn't enjoy it the way I might have been.
I understand that. So in addition to One Flap Down and Hackman, there were two other nicknames that I need you to tell me about. Please tell me about Penitentiary Face, which you did not like, right? Penitentiary Face.
That was kind of interesting. Okay, so we're in spring training, and we had this annual thing where somebody would come into the clubhouse and take a T-shirt or a shirt out of everybody's locker and put something funny on it every year, every spring training.
Okay.
So we come in, grab our shirts, you know, something's funny on it. So this particular season, I come in, we all in there, and everybody's laughing and giggling and all this, and so I grab my shirt, and I really kind of didn't really look at it. I just grabbed it, and I knew I had to put it on.
Right.
So I put it on. I'm just standing there, and everybody's dying. So I take the shirt, and I pull it, and I'm looking. I don't see anything.
Uh-huh.
Because it's right at the bottom. So at the bottom of my T-shirt, all these numbers. They put numbers on it as if I'm taking my mugshot at the police
station.
That's
cold-blooded.
So we didn't know that Lowell Cohen was in the clubhouse. So, which he shouldn't have been, but he actually saw that. And it took off. And that's how I got that name.
Right. But and you changed it because you didn't like penitentiary.
I didn't like it, but I went to a lot of places and they would chant that.
That's hilarious.
No, I didn't like that, but, you know, no, I didn't like that.
Oh, and you changed it to, would you change it to correctional facility face or something like that?
No, they tried to make it more politically
correct. Right.
No,
right.
I didn't like that one either.
Right. And the one you really didn't like was Concrete Marshmallow.
Concrete Marshmallow. Yeah, somebody called me that. I mean, it was kind of cute. You know, you're hard on the outside, soft on the inside. You know, but at one point, I mean, you know, I would talk to the media, and once they got to know me better, that came out.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was all right.
Yeah.
You know.
Let's talk about how you changed your number to the 00. Did that come about from your surgeries?
Yes. Oh, boy. When I came, I wanted number 30 because I wore that in Houston. But when I came, they said that number was taken. So it was reserved for Chili Davis. So I said, well, I really don't care anymore. So I took 26.
Okay.
So I wore that. And then Frank was let go. So out of respect for Frank, I wore number 20 for that year.
Ooh, I like that.
Just a nice breeze. And then I
candlestick.
Exactly. But actually, I had asked for 00 earlier.
Oh, you did.
And Al Rosen would not let me have it. He thought it would be too much pressure, or it would just give the press easier access.
Too much fodder for the press,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you know,
right.
Hey, you done nothing again. You know, they would use the zeros, and I was trying to explain to Al,
got
you know,
it.
I can handle that. You know, I had two knee surgeries, and I had this wrist surgery. So for me, it was kind of like starting all over again. So then the next year comes.
Mm-hmm.
I go upstairs again. I go, I want to wear 00, and they finally let me, you know, do it.
Yeah.
But it was because of that, in my mind, the way I felt, it was a starting over thing.
New beginning.
Because I thought my career was over, actually.
When after
I
all those wrist. Surgeries,
yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so, of course, you know, all the jokes came and all that, but they realized that I could handle that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I thought it was pretty cool, so that's all that happened with
that. I like the significance of that.
Yes.
I like that. New
appreciate
beginning starting
yes.
over after your two surgeries.
Yep.
Well, Jeffrey, it's so exciting for me to introduce you when you come back to the ballpark, and I hope you feel all the fan love. And now we've got you back as a community ambassador and a special instructor. How's that working out for you? Do you enjoy that?
Oh, I love that greatly. First of all, this it's an honor. You know, it's a complete honor. It's a privilege. I mean, it's like when they called and said, "Well, listen, it's time for you to come home. It's time for you to be more the family." And I was like, "Oh, really?" So when Mario and Larry Bear, Mario Alioto
mm-hmm.
and Larry Bear called me, that was a special moment, a special day.
Yeah.
And so then they explained the role, and I was saying, like, wow, this is an easy job. I don't have to make up anything. You know, you have the greatest organizations, like, come on, you know, and
just be yourself and share your knowledge.
That's it.
Yeah.
So that was a blessing right there.
Yeah.
And it's been unreal. It's been unreal.
How is it for you coming back to the ballpark when you are on the field and when we show you on the big screen? And do you feel all of that?
It hits me. It hits me.
Yeah.
It hits me. It hits me good, in a good way.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, wow, after all these years and, you know, and they show a little something. And
yeah.
All the energy in your voice and the way you,
Jeffrey Lynn.
You do it and your passion.
Thank you.
I feel it. You know, yes, I do.
Oh.
I really do.
That's good.
Yeah,
that's good.
San Francisco has a special place.
Special
in my heart.
Place. That
yes,
fan base
yes.
is like no other. No
yes,
other.
Yes.
And I know we got to let you go now because you're coaching youngsters. How much do you enjoy that? These are kids and you're showing them your knowledge.
Oh, I love that. I love this. You know, I deal with 16 year olds right now, you know, just coming out of high school and all that. A lot of traveling, but. You know, it's so much fun. You know, a lot of times I find myself, you know, having a moment, and I think about my father, you know,
and
the way he coached us and all that. I go, wow, I never thought I would be doing this.
Yeah.
Especially with kids and have to deal with their parents.
That's a whole forgive the pun, but that's a whole different ballgame in 2018.
A whole different ballgame.
Yes, yes. But I love it's a way for you to honor your dad as well.
Yes, yes.
I love that.
It's so much fun. It's so gratifying.
Would you like to do more coaching? Would you like to get into major league coaching on a full-time? Is that your goal?
That's my goal.
Oh, you'd be amazing at that.
My goal is to come back, and my goal is to coach.
Yeah.
In any capacity, yeah.
That would be amazing.
Yes.
Well, I wish you all the best. I can't thank you enough. I told you earlier, I used to go to Candlestick on photo day and try to get my picture taken with you. So this is a full circle moment for me. Happy birthday to the both of us on September 22nd, Virgos. Jeffrey Leonard, Forever Giant, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Manel.
What a treat. Thank you.
Yep.
Cheers, my brother.
Cheers.